Oh, Free Tech Live is advertising School Sucks now.
Really?
Yeah.
How so? When did this start?
Tonight.
Oh, you're kidding me. We should listen.
I guess.
Thank you so much.
A little odd for them to advertise a show that happens at the same time.
It's not permanent. That's not permanent. No. Oh, wait. Do they say when it is?
We didn't discuss it, so I'm guessing they won't because they probably don't even know what we do. But
do you, what are they going to say about it?
I don't know. I didn't tell them. I just said, hey, you need to tell people that, I don't know, Segal CAI wants them to listen to School Sucks podcast. or hey, if you want to hear Osborne, you can listen to...
It's Osborne approved?
Yeah, Osborne approved. Yeah, like Mandrake Clock Level.
All right. Thank you. That's terrific. We need the bump. What do you think of what Kokesh did or is doing?
I was I just spent all of dinner reading every news article I could find on that. I'm intrigued. I think there's a number of ways you could do that well, and I think there's a multitude of ways that that's going to go badly. But it sounds like he's doing it right. Like he's going to, you know, have people who are willing to get arrested and people who aren't, and they're going to walk across the bridge, and then the people who want to get arrested are going to line up and get themselves arrested, and everybody else is going to turn around and walk back.
Right, right.
So as long as... All it takes is one nut job, though.
Yeah, that's one. Actually, let me start. Hold on a second. Start broadcasting. We are broadcasting, and we are doing a pre-show.
Yeah.
So if you're just joining us, we are talking about Adam Kokesh's, does it have a name?
I don't know. It's like March on Washington or something like that. But the other thing I do is tell people that if you see one of your buddies next to you take their rifle off their back, hit the deck.
Yeah.
So if you've got one jackass unslinging his weapon and everybody else lays down on the ground, then I don't know.
That's good advice.
That could minimize any casualties.
So if you're just joining us, Adam Kokesh is planning to organize this March on Washington, where they march into Washington, D.C. from Virginia across the Potomac. Is it the Potomac?
I think that's what they
call it. Seems like it would be. And as kind of an act of civil disobedience on Independence Day, and is trying to get 10,000 people who will do this with him. And I think this is very intriguing. Osborne was saying that there's certainly plenty of ways that this could go wrong.
Sure.
Yeah.
And they pretty much all involve, you know, some idiot doing something stupid.
Mm. I agree.
But I think if people fall in line and stay mellow, things will be okay.
So the other big news,
I wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't do it. If you're just joining us, this is our pre-show.
Which is not to say that I have not carried firearms into D.C. before, because I clearly have. Not particularly on purpose, but living in Northern Virginia, I'd often make a wrong turn and end up in the district.
Oh, really?
Yeah, with a trunk load of guns.
Now, why would a man like you have a trunk load of guns?
I was more of an enthusiast back then. I have more of a closet full of guns now that never really get taken out. But
right.
Back in those days when ammo was cheap, you know, and I lived next to NRA headquarters, so where they have a nice firing range, like super nice. And so I'd go in there, and, you know, a couple times a week and shoot. Now I wouldn't even think about firing off a round because I just think 50 cents, 50 cents, 50 cents.
Oh, yeah. People like it, though.
But shoot, back then I was ordering ammo online for like $5 for a box of 9mm, which is nuts. I challenge you to find a box for $30 today.
Yeah, how long ago was this?
12 years ago, 10 years ago. Yeah.
Oh, we have somebody watching us. Hello, this is the pre-show. We'll be starting the regular show in about, I don't know, 6 minutes. And a lot to talk about tonight, and hopefully we'll take some calls. So, you are now into Game of Thrones.
Afraid so. I hate starting a series while it's still in progress.
I know what you mean.
Because, for example, so I had been resisting Game of Thrones for a long time. I tried watching the first episode when it came out,
mm-hmm.
and I was just like, this is a stupid bunch of dirty sex and midgets, and people with face paint and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I am not into this.
Wait, who has face paint?
Those, what do you call them? The Darkarians? The horse people.
The horse people, the Dothraki.
Okay, there you go. So anyway, I gave up on it after the first episode.
Right.
But the other night, I was over at your place, and you had two seasons sitting on the shelf.
Right.
And you've been constantly peer pressuring me into watch this show.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, okay, well, I'll borrow these. Because my family was out of town. I didn't really have much going on over the weekend. So I took them. I got home. I put it in the player. And I did not stop watching it or go to sleep until I was finished.
Wow.
So now I've seen two seasons. I understand there's a third season going on right now. So I need to pirate someone's HBO password so I can...
You don't have HBO?
No.
Really? That surprises me. How did you find it? Was it a magical experience? Do you love it?
I guess I like it better than other series that I've sat through, like The Sopranos or...
Yeah.
What was the one about the mortuary?
6 Feet Under.
There you go. Like that one. Like those ones, I didn't find any redeemable characters at all, and it was really irritating. Whereas this one, the spunky little daughter who's on the run.
Arya, yeah.
She's cool.
Yeah.
And the bastard son who's up at the wall, you know. He seems kind of lost and confused. And
Jon Snow,
I can kind of get into his story. I don't appreciate that Boromir had to die. They always kill Boromir like early in the story.
Who's that?
Sean Bean.
Oh yeah, spoiler alert! If you know who Sean Bean is, actually, you know what? You've had 2 years to get your act together on Game of Thrones, people. If you haven't seen it, Eddard Stark.
Yeah.
Dies.
So anyway, I would like to watch a story with Boromir where he doesn't die, at least until the end.
What was that? What was his name in? Was that in
Lord of the Rings?
Lord of the Rings. Yeah, never really was into that Lord of the Rings. But I told the story.
That is strange to me.
Well, I think I told the story that I smoked when it came out, mm-hmm. and I just found it to be an insufferable experience waiting 3 hours to have a cigarette. Well, now we go to the movies, and I've got this thing, and I just puff and puff away.
Now, when those movies came out, I was living in Virginia, and we had the Arlington Cinema Draft House, where you could sit and drink beer and smoke. And
watch we
movies.
Did, yeah, we did talk this about this. So who, what other characters do you like? You like Arya? What do you think of Tyrion, the little one, the little fellow?
You know, I did not care for him at first, but he grew on me very quickly.
He grows on you,
and of course,
he never grows.
Right.
Spoiler alert: he's always that size.
But so I'm very bummed out at the point in the story that I'm at because it's after the big battle and he's just all scarred up and laying there and he's had all his power stripped from him. And even though he was a badass and you know, saved the city, he didn't get any credit for it. And I'm just kind of sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do one more post on Facebook. So you're right up to the beginning of last season.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'm very interested in Dragon Lady. Much at all. I feel like they've brought too many storylines in to be where they're at right now. Like there's a couple, like the witch lady seducing the one brother.
The witch lady, and the one who says, the night is dark and full of terrors.
Yeah, that one. Like, and it gives birth to the shadow creature out of her vagina hole. And like that whole thing doesn't seem like it's going anywhere.
Yeah, that's another thing I want to start saying.
Vagina hole?
No, 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 no.
The night is dark and full of tears.
Yeah, just as, like when... You know how people try to make small talk with you?
Yes.
I think that that would be so funny. Like, if you're on the chairlift with somebody, and that's the only thing you say,
yeah,
and they're like, oh, it's cold. Like, the night is dark and full of terrors. What was the other thing I wanted to... I'm not going to say that on the show. The other thing I wanted to start saying to people from Django Unchained. Fancy Pants N. You remember that? Have you seen Django?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They say a lot of things in that
movie you shouldn't
that,
say.
That I would not say.
That you shouldn't
in,
say.
In life.
I said it as a joke. I said, I'm going to start calling people that in real life. but I'm not going to. It's totally inappropriate. Yeah, but I really like Game of Thrones and what I found about the narrative of it, I've never read the books, but from what it was explained to me, like Celestine and Corey have read the books and they say, you know, it's a story of going from one place to another, pretty much. And if you think about it, everybody is always kind of mostly on the move, or the people that they're focusing on are traveling. So you just had the, I'm trying to think of, there's more on the move kind of stuff in the third season. Mm. So, it seems like a lot of the episodes go by and nothing really happens though.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's what I don't like about those, especially those ones where, it, you know, it's only a 10 episode season.
Yeah.
So you get 10 episodes for the entire year and nothing really happened. And then you got to sit around for 9 months and wait for the next one.
Right. So I think it was after the last episode, I think I said that it is the kind of show that you would benefit from being able to watch all at once. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because
I think I will resist the third season until all 10 episodes are out, which should be in just a couple weeks, right?
It's hard to believe that show's only 10 episodes. I thought they were longer. I'm just we're getting ready to start our show here, so I'm just looking for
which I think is even music. short for HBO. Aren't those seasons usually 12 episodes?
Yeah, I was thinking HBO series were usually 12 or 14. Mm-hmm. Episodes. I remember The Sopranos. Am I wrong? I remember The Sopranos being like 15 episodes.
Now, I'm also like, do they put out more than one season a year? Because
no.
I don't remember it being over 2 years ago that the first episode came out.
Oh yeah, it was I want to say it was winter 2000, like the beginning of 2011.
Hmm.
Yeah, but I really enjoy the show. And Tyrion is one of my favorite characters. I'm really rooting for him.
Yeah, I want that king to just get his face just
Joffrey
just chopped up.
Yeah, what do you think? Who do you think is ultimately going to be in the throne, the Iron Throne?
I don't know. I guess if I'd read the books, I would know that. But I think it's obvious how they're setting it up is for the Arya and the, what's his name, Godric, or, you know, the escaped bastard son.
Of the Baratheon son.
Yeah. They're clearly going to get together and they're going to be king and queen.
Interesting. I think there might be a few other twists and turns.
Probably before then, but I think it's obvious that's how they're setting it up.
Yeah. There's some kind of prophecy, too, about the three heads of the dragon. Are people into this conversation? We are going to start the show here in just... we're over the time that we were supposed to start the show, so we do have to start the show. I'm sorry, everyone. We've been talking about Game of Thrones, and I really enjoy it. I feel like the show is a little too slow, and I think you would benefit if you haven't seen it yet from waiting until the series concludes. People have written a lot of things that they want me to read in the chat. Watch The Wire. What do you guys think are some of the best examples of positive and peaceful parenting in films and or TV series? Gosh, that's a good topic for the show. Also, what are some of you and Osborne thoughts on Twins Peak? Twin Peaks. I've never seen it. Osborne probably has.
Yes, I watched it. It's probably been about 10 years ago. And I do have the entire series on DVD, but I haven't sat down to watch it again.
Fire, walk with me, right?
Yeah.
Someone says really meant. What's so multi-layered? Oh, yeah. Twin Peaks is multi-layered.
I can't say I understood it.
Right.
I was just.
What's it about? It's
like a detective-y thing. There's a girl who was murdered, and they gotta find out who did it.
Mm. And it's David Lynch.
Right.
Did the TV series, and there was a movie. Did he do the movie too?
There was a movie. I don't think I've seen the movie. All right. I'm not sure what that was about. Evidently, there's this new series on Netflix. Have you heard of this?
No. What is it?
I can't. It's
with Kevin Spacey?
No. It's a different one. It's some kind of murdery thing, but there's also werewolves involved.
Murdery wolves.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I turned it on. I watched 5 minutes of it. I couldn't. It looked like home video, and the acting was very poor. So I couldn't handle it.
I watched the first episode of that Kevin Spacey series. Mm-hmm. It's like a political thing.
Yeah.
I didn't love it. I like Kevin Spacey a lot, but I don't think I can get into like a political show. And let me tell you this, as a public service announcement, HBO also has another show called Veep, which is a stupid name. And it also has Julia Louis-Dreyfus in it.
Mm.
And she's the vice president.
Mm.
And it is the worst piece of shit I've ever seen.
Really?
It's terrible.
Wow.
It's like the kind of humor, it's like Seinfeld, but she's by herself without Jerry and Kramer and George, and she's the vice president.
Yeah, it doesn't sound fun.
It's so stupid. Somebody is in it, though. The youngest brother, Buster, from Arrested Development is in it, though. He plays like her assistant.
Oh, here's another one. Have you seen this news show with Jeff Bridges?
Yeah. I watched, I think, almost the whole first season of that.
Is that Jeff Bridges I'm thinking of?
It's Jeff Daniels.
Jeff Daniels. There you go. Yeah, I watched the first episode of that. His whole little tirade on the stage there and whatnot.
If you're looking,
that was pretty good.
Yeah. But if you're looking for like a political message that you're going to agree with, you're ultimately going to be disappointed.
Oh, okay.
By that show.
I figured as much, so I didn't keep watching. Yeah. But.
The chat agrees. Veep is really awful. It's a terrible show. Terrible. Ugh. All right. Do you want to start our regular show?
Hmm.
Okay, everyone. I am going to just save that as the pre-show. What's the date today?
9th.
Five, nine. All right. Newsroom, they say. Okay, be back in a second with a regular show with non-television and movie topics. Unfortunately, jeez, wish we could just do that. This obligation. What are you doing next?
I'm going to watch a movie later.
Yeah? What movie?
Pain and Gain.
Hmm.
Did you guys watch Iron Man yet?
Not yet.
Oh, my goodness.
I was at the movies. Have I told you about Carb Night? You know, yes, about Carb Night. Yes. So I decided on Sunday to go to the movies when I saw Oblivion.
Oh, what did you think?
It was all right.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
What did you think?
It was all right.
What did you like about it? I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah, it was definitely pretty.
Tom Cruise always
captivating. Yeah, I didn't see the clone thing coming until it was close.
Right.
But then after that, you know, everything falls. Okay, well, this is what's going to happen now, and this, you know,
right. Yeah, I was doing carb night on Sunday, and that was my first opportunity to eat carbs. So I got some candy and some popcorn, and I went to the movies and really had myself a nice time with snacks.
Nice.
Then I went home and I ate corn chips and hummus and ice cream. I like carb night.
Yeah, sounds good.
But I don't think. I think I'm eating too many carbs during the week to be able to do that. So you just call on Skype. Someone says, yeah, we'll take one call and then we're getting out of here. So give us a call, 843, join SSP or Skype in School Sucks Live. And we will talk to you. Wait a minute. I got a message from Stefan Molyneux saying, me on TV, check it out. So yeah, call in. What channel was Stefan Molyneux on? RT. Consequences of Patriotism on Breaking the Set. I got to get on that show.
You were on when Adam was on, right?
No, I was on Adam's show.
Oh, you weren't on RT?
No, I was on RT.
Yeah.
But I got to get on that show. All right, let's take a call from Levi. Hey, you're on the show.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, how are you? What's on your mind tonight, Levi?
Well, you know, I've been a long-time listener to the podcast. Just like I remember seeing you on Stefan Molyneux when you only had episode 6.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I haven't donated anything. I recently just got a job. But, you know, I plan to because, you know, you helped me with, you know, just some stuff. I never really liked school either. And, like, when I saw your, like, podcast, someone actually saying, hey, school sucks. Like, it was amazing.
How old are you? Emperor's New Clothes kind of thing.
What was that?
How old are you?
20 now. But at the time, I think I was like 16.
What did you say, Osborne?
So it's like the Emperor's New Clothes story.
Ah,
I was just talking about that with my daughter the other night.
Yeah. Yeah. What'd you say to your daughter about it?
I can't even remember. But we had a long discussion about, you know, going along with the crowd and what happens to you when you point out things that are true that people are saying aren't true. And
So that's great. That's great to hear, Levi. I really appreciate that. And you've been listening all along?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, like, I've taken breaks here and there as I got into other podcasts, like the Joe Rogan podcast, and, you know, but that doesn't really matter. But, yeah, off and on, pretty much for, I don't know, how long have you been, like, active? I think, like, what, 5 years almost?
No.
Like, three.
Three, almost 3.5.
Yeah. Well, anyway, like, you really contributed a lot to, like, just, like, myself. But let's have a topic. I was wondering if you ever had like a really troubled student that was just out of hand and had like oppositional defiance disorder or something like that, some nonsense made up disease. Like, I was wondering how, like, you know, you dealt with that and your thoughts. Like, did you ever have a kid that would just like get up and leave the classroom or something like that?
Yeah. The truth is I probably dealt with it poorly compared to how I would deal with it today. Mm-hmm. But the school that I worked at between the year 2000 and 2004, and really I worked at a similar school all the way from right up to 2006. So I worked for the same company that ran two schools pretty much from 2000 to 2006. And most of these kids would have been classifiable as having an oppositional defiant disorder. So mm-hmm. It was pretty much the entire population of kids that I worked with for about 6 years.
When you were working at like an inner city school, I think I remember you were mentioning once.
The school was in the woods of Vermont, but the way it was a boarding school.
It wasn't inner city, but it was like troubled kids, right?
Yeah, it was a boarding school filled with kids who were taken into state custody, mostly from the inner city, and then the state paid tuition and Medicaid for them to come to this school and be put on drugs. And I worked there.
That's fabulous. I work at Del Taco. I sell people poison.
We have a similar story.
I'm pretty much a diarrhea vendor.
Del Taco, it's called?
Yeah, Del Taco. It's a Californian franchise.
Yeah, I remember
like
some Del Taco back in the day.
I mean, it's okay, but, I mean, it's poison.
So, I don't know. I mean, it was just so the norm for me for so long that it's hard to think of stories that stand out. I really think I, you know, early in my career, I really saw it as like an affront to my authority or my supposed authority that I was supposed to have. I hadn't learned that these kids didn't care about that and thought it was a bunch of BS. So I was disappointed by the problems that I used to have. I mean, when I started, I was very low on the totem pole at this job, and I wasn't even a teacher. I was what was called a residential counselor, so I just worked in the dorms and would be, like, responsible for managing the daily routines of these kids and like a
babysitter.
Pretty much. Yeah. But I mean, we would do stuff. I wouldn't just like, we would do stuff together, but yeah, it was basically supervision.
My mother works in like group homes, and that's kind of like a nice word for orphanage.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a fascist organization, and I mean, it's state funded, but privately owned. That's what I mean by that.
That's what this is. Right. And it's, would I want to use the word fascism? It's, that seems like a strong word to me, but you're right.
It is.
But
I mean, the word's been muddled kind of too.
But it is, but you're not, but it is finding a really, really terrible word for it is very appropriate, because basically what happens if people are unfamiliar is that these kids are taken out of their homes, and these homes can be abusive. And obviously some of these interventions, I guess, are justified if you're considering just the safety of the kid. They could be abused viciously, physically, right, or sexually. But then once they go into state custody, and this is where a lot of my ideas about how government can contribute to a common social good or help the most desperate and needy among us, that hope for what government could be kind of evaporated slowly while I was doing this job, because the kids are, you know, money is rounded up from the taxpayers in these states. It's given to the school. The kids are on Medicaid, and, you know, children on Medicaid are usually drugged, often in a somewhat experimental way. And that was a lot of what I observed.
Yeah. When I was like 9, I'm going to try to keep this short. My parents got divorced, and I did not take that very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of having like emotional breakdowns a lot. And I got into this whole fiasco. I ended up had to stay after school because I called this campus lady, or the, you know, when they have like, they'll give little kids little uniforms, and then they'll have them report on the other students on the playground.
Yeah.
You know.
Gosh, yeah. Okay. And, do you remember what the name of that was?
What year that was?
No, the name of what the position was where you
Peace
get the...
Peace Patrol.
They were
the Peace Patrol. Or something like that. It was Peace something.
Okay.
And they'd have little, like, little orange vests. And I had stopped to take a water bottle out of my corduroys because I was on the swing. And they said, well, why are you on the swing? It's, you know, why are you on the swing? You're not swinging. I was like, oh, I just took my water bottle out. But, you know, these are little kids, and they gave them a little taste of power.
Right.
So they're like, all right, we're writing you up. What's your name? You know, and they couldn't spell my name. I had to keep repeating it. And this is, you know, so I was prone to emotional outbursts. So I call one of them a bitch.
I think appropriately so.
Yeah, well, then, you know, I was 9. Like, we were 9. So calling someone a bitch is, like, tantamount to, like, heresy in, like, the 1500s.
Okay, yep.
And so they get the ragged old maid that they have working for the school, watching all the kids on the playground. And she marches me up to the principal's office. And I had been getting into trouble a lot. I'd get up out of class, say, you know what? I'm just going home. You know, I don't fuck algebra or, you know, whatever.
I like your style.
Thank you.
You were 9, 10 when this was happening?
Yeah, I was about 9. And, so I'd had a previous report, you know, I'd been causing trouble. So they had a police officer come and talk to me. And now this was the important thing. I had told last year, this asshole old man teacher, and teaching is like the only job where like the longer you do it, the worse you get at it.
And this guy that's true.
Like he wasn't ever going to get fired. So he'd just be like, hey, you know, whatever, kids. And he wasn't that cool way, whatever. It's like, I'm going to fuck with him, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, nothing's going to happen to me. So I told that this, like, decrepit old man, you know what? Like, I just said, well, I'll just burn this fucking school down. I'll shove a pistol down your throat. I'm like, and this was
What year was this? What year was this?
2002.
Okay, so you were past the safety period for threatening to burn the school down and shove pistols places, because I mean, I get out of school. I finished high school in 1995, and mm-hmm. It seemed like with Columbine and zero tolerance that a lot of stuff began to change. And what you're saying, I think at any time is a threat that a responsible person, like I'll burn the school down, that a responsible person should take seriously. I think you would agree. Obviously there's kids doing, I just heard a story the other day about a kid getting suspended for holding a pencil like a gun because he was pretending to be a Marine and his friend was pretending to be a quote bad guy. And they both got suspended for that activity. So yeah, I mean, that's a legitimate concern for somebody to have. So what happened?
Well, long story short, the cop tried to take me home after school, and my brother was home because I could see his truck, but my brother wasn't going to answer the door.
Yeah.
Because he was probably just getting stoned with his girlfriend. And he's like, oh, well, no one answers the door. I'm 9 years old, and, you know, I had threatened the school. So the cop takes me down to the police station, and I can remember clearly the big 9/11 mural freshly painted on the wall.
The 9/11 mural?
Yeah, 9/11 mural.
What was on that?
You ever seen those old Soviet Union posters?
Yes.
It was the, it was kind of like that, but imagine the American flag in the background and then a police officer and then like a fireman holding an axe and a flashlight instead of a hammer and a sickle.
Yeah.
Swear to God. It was pretty much like an Americanized version of that.
Okay, I can picture what you're talking about.
Yeah, and it's like, never forget, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he takes me in there, and they put me in, you know, those little benches where they handcuff your ankles and your wrists?
Yeah, yes. I have that at my house.
I've sat in one of those benches before, yeah, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so they lock 9-year-old me up. And I'm sitting there next to these girls who got caught shoplifting, and they were like just giggling about it. And then I think there was like some guy in the drunk tank screaming something. And well, long story short, they put me in an ambulance ride. They put like they locked me up in an ambulance, mm-hmm. like in a stretcher, and they take me to like L.A. from where I am, and I have to stay at a psychiatric ward for a week. Just for that, yeah. And because I had insurance, they kept me for the whole week. They wanted to keep me way longer. Like they tried, but like halfway through the week, I learned like, oh yeah, don't say you want to kill your dad anymore. Because I did. Because like, you know, I was mad at him. I was mad at both my parents.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I smartened up halfway through, and then they prescribed me Zoloft. And this was before they knew not to give that to kids. This was before the commercials said not recommended for patients under 18 years old. You know, when there was just those little sad dots bouncing around. I don't know if you remember those Zoloft commercials.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, they actually experimented on me with those kind of drugs.
Yeah, I remember a girl I went to high school with being prescribed it in like 1994. So, yeah, but it was a lot of that, and it was a lot of more serious drugs that I was giving kids all the way up to like lithium. These drugs, I guess the level of the experimental nature, there was certainly a difference of degrees. None of those drugs, I think, are particularly safe for young children. I mean, there was a boy who probably weighed about 80 pounds, and I was giving him, on the days that I did meds, 35 pills in a day in four different pill-giving sessions.
Well, you know, the thing is, by the time the government intervenes and takes these kids away, the damage is already done.
I agree that damage is definitely done, yeah, of course.
Burn holes, yeah. So, like,
are burn holes?
Those are not burn holes.
So, this shit here, tar.
I don't know, Dad. What is it?
I don't know. What is it? It came from your shoes.
Well, anyway, sorry about that. I'm on a public computer.
Oh.
Yeah. So, where was I? Yeah, the damage is done. Like, my mom, she works with kids, like, 14 to 18. And, you know, they take them from, like, worse counties than the ones we live in. And, like, yeah, in juvenile halls. And a lot of these, like, girls have already been prostitutes, have already smoked meth, and are just used to having money. And there's just really nothing they can anyone can do for these kids because they're just so far gone. Like, the best that a company can do for them is put them on pills. So there is, you know, they pill them up, and then they take them to church.
Pill them up, send them to church.
Wow.
You know, and then, and these kids, I mean, like, it's a, my mom said, well, now we have level 14 kids. And the difference is that level 14 kids, I mean, this was just hell she was going through. They had kids who were just smashing the windows and then using the glass to cut themselves.
How common? And, go ahead.
And this is just like a 22-bed facility. It's up on a ranch, kind of, up in the mountains. And like these women are just 40-year-old, overweight, middle-aged women. They're not... I think there's like one or two men who work at the facility, and it's just like they're completely underqualified. Like my mom doesn't have a college degree. Most of the women she works with don't. A couple of the managers, you know, do, but they don't have to work with the kids. They kind of just make sure they can – they just make sure they spend their budget so they can get, you know, their money next year.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just a mess. Like, there's just nothing that, like, these kids are just lost, it seems like.
Yeah, and I understand that these behaviors do result in real symptoms and actions that fit this diagnosis that they've created called oppositional defiant disorder, which I believe is kind of a natural reaction to the very unnatural treatment of human beings. I dealt with it on a day-in and day-out basis. I mean, most of the kids that I worked with would have been told that they had this, and probably most of them. I mean, I used to read the jackets that came with the kids, like when new kids came to the dorm or when I had my own class, new kids would come to the class. I mean, I would read their IEP, their individualized education plan, and their behavior plans and their, you know, their med records and their psych history. And that was really, really common that would be on there. I didn't see it as a hard diagnosis. It would usually just say OD. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know if that changed. I mean, I was out of that environment by 2004, but I certainly saw a lot of that. I do. I mean, obviously, there are things that are seared into my mind about that experience. Like, I remember one time this kid got into a fight with one of my teacher's aides, and she was a girl, not very well equipped to defend herself, and she tried to stop him from leaving the building. So he pushed her, and then he grabbed her by the hair and used that to hold her head while he kicked it. And Jesus. I had to, you know, like three of us had to go and grab him. And I actually had to kind of elbow him in the face a little bit to get him to let go of this girl's hair because he was ripping her hair out. And it was a mess. There was blood. And so eventually, so I put him on the ground face first and physically restrained him. And I really was so angry. I felt like I was just going to, he wasn't a small kid, but he was smaller than me. And I felt I was just going to like snap his wrists like twigs. I was squeezing him so tight. I was so angry about what he had done. And then like a day would pass and it would seem like he would be a different person. So it was just like this psychotic episode. And that was like seeing something like that something like that was possible. That was a very, very tense environment to be in, because what precipitated that assault on this staff member of mine seemed pretty trivial. And it seemed like the kind of thing that happened every day. Like we would always be butting heads on like, do this. No, I won't do that. And raising our voices. And that kind of stuff happened all the time. But yeah, just the tension of that job was that was always something that I guess was possible to, that could be right around the corner. So it was very, very tense, but that OD label was something that I was used to dealing with for many, many years, for sure. I mean, there's a couple other things that stick out in my mind like that. But that was the norm for me. I would tell the staff, like, if you want a kid to do something at 8:30, I mean, I wasn't always, I would have had a much bit different approach to this. I said, you have to start putting the idea in his head at 7:30, because if you go there at 8:28 and say, this needs to be done at 8:30, he's just going to say no. And then you're going to wind up spending a half an hour, probably escalating a situation that could have been avoided. So one thing that I learned
kind of reminds me of like a POW camp, because back in NAM, when they would get an American POW, the NKV, they would start by turning them pink. You know what that is?
No.
Well, what they say is, you know, like, how much information are you really going to get out of, you know, a soldier? They're trained to give you their number, their name, whatever. So what they would do is, before or after torturing them, when the, you know, they broke them down a little bit with hunger and sleep deprivation, they'd say, so, you know, what are, I'm not going to do a racist Asian voice, but what's some of the shortcomings of America? You know, and then they'd start working from there to get them. And, you know, who knows what someone in the 70s would say about that, especially someone in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, maybe something like, well, they let Negroes in front of the bus now, but.
Right.
You know, but, and, you know, they work them down from there. And it kind of seems like, you know, those kind of institutions, the ones you worked for, the ones my mom had to work for, they kind of got to, you know, you have to work the kids mentally. You know,
I don't even know if I ever would have seen it like that. And there were definitely people who work there that saw it more in this game theory, like we're at war with these kids kind of approach. And yeah, I don't remember ever really, really feeling like that. But one thing that I learned there is that it's perfectly normal for kids to not want to do what adults want them to do and tell them to do.
Right, because if you're an adult and someone's like, hey, go pick that up, you're like, you know, I'm an adult, fuck you.
But I would probably, I would probably do it if somebody said, hey, go pick that up, other adult.
Right.
I might, you know, talk to them about how you ask somebody nicely to do something, and maybe that wouldn't be a conversation that would ultimately be fruitful.
Well, there's a difference between a favor and a command.
Yeah, sure. And the behavior of the staff and the approach of the staff varied from place to place and from person to person. There were people who worked there in jobs like mine who were very, very sweet, who had a very, very good rapport with kids and were very understanding and were very empathetic, but they usually didn't like climb the ladder of the positions of power. So the people who typically became like dorm supervisors or in these more managerial positions were people who were more forceful, and, you know, maybe it was their size. I mean, the guy who trained me to be a supervisor in the dorms, he was 6'7". He was black. He weighed about 280 pounds. He was very, very imposing. I mean, when you're, some of these kids were enormous, but at 6'7", he was pretty much the biggest guy there. And he had an attitude about him where he wasn't going to take any shit from anybody. And he, despite not being, he and I became friends, and he would do things when he was my boss, and I'd be like, that was stupid. I wouldn't have done that. And he would have an explanation, but he would also have a temper, and he would get emotional, and he would do things that he would admit, like maybe that wasn't the best way to solve the problem. But then there was this other woman when I was just a dorm staff who worked with me. Her name was Gail, and she was very, very sweet and very, very understanding, almost to a fault as far as some of the other staff were concerned, because they said, you know, if you act this way, if you are this way with these kids, they're going to walk all over you, and they're going to manipulate you. So people saw it as like, these are kids who need love. These are kids who need hugs. These are kids who need understanding. And there were other people who said, if you give these kids an inch, they'll take a mile. So you have to be firm. So there was what I'm saying is there was a variety of approaches to dealing with these kids. And
well, there's a variety of, like, you know, kids, like certain kids have like different, you know, like disorders, and they like they react differently to different things.
Yeah.
Because like when I was in a psychiatric ward for like 5 days, there was they had a guy, like, you know, a big black guy, except he was a giant Austrian guy, kind of like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Except his hair was horrible. He just had like a big, like a crispy little dirty blonde, like, wave over the top of his dome. But I mean, he's like a big scary Austrian guy. And like, I remember seeing him like wrestling a kid down who was had to be like 12 and just bones, you know?
Right.
And, you know, holding him down while they got, while they pulled his pants down to give him that shot in the ass.
Yeah.
Horrific.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I see that, and I could, and at my mom's work, you know, she works with kids. I think she's one of the better people that works there because she has a standard, and like if a kid works with her, she's good to him, you know, and then she'll deal with him. But if a kid's all out hostile, then she just kind of, she doesn't do him any favors. And then she has a lot of power with the kids because she's the food manager. So she does all the shopping and then all the cooking, and she decides what they eat.
So who's your animals?
You know, and she kind of has, she sort of trains them in a way, which is a little scary.
Yeah, I definitely saw a lot of the carrots and sticks approach at this school. And in fact, the way that reinforcements were used sometimes was very bizarre, and I never fully understood it, but the people who didn't have to deal with kids on the, like, a regular basis every day, like the people who were the administrative, like the residential coordinator and the clinical coordinator or the director of the school, they would come, and when a kid did something really, really terrible, they would come down and take the kid to McDonald's. Right. Mm-hmm. As kind of like, oh, this is the love you need kind of thing. But
yeah,
what
the, my mom had saw that too. They had one girl that literally the same kind of thing happened. One, a girl attacked another person, and then the social worker came and then took her to McDonald's. And you know, my mom, when she told me about that, she was outraged.
So it created this perverse, I think, understand.
The girl that got her face cut was on Donahue or something like that.
What was that?
I think it created this perverse understanding of the kids of the whole carrots and sticks things, because on the day-to-day basis of us working with them, it was all carrots and sticks, right? It was all do this, get this, don't do this, this happens to you. So what they eventually learned is that if they did something really bad, there would be like the attention that they need. It was a very, very demented environment. And I always thought that I kind of fell somewhere in the middle. Like, I regret a lot of the things that I did, a lot of the things that I was involved in, but it certainly attracted a lot of people who were just very, very power hungry and wanted to have that leverage over kids. So it was a very strange and unhealthy environment. And the school did help some kids. I mean, some kids would probably leave there and say, that was a really positive experience in my life. But I think there was a lot of corruption in how the kids were treated, how the kids were medicated, how the kids were handled educationally, clinically, residentially, that I just had the very unenlightened as far as, you know, where I am today or what I believe today. So yeah. What I was saying, though, is I think it was important to be proactive. If kids don't want to do what adults want them to do, by proactive, I don't mean set up an hour schedule of manipulating them at 7:30 into them doing what you want at 8:30, but like being, having like an honest conversation about expectations. Like, you know, if we're going to do this, this is what the expectation will be. And that usually worked. And I think that works, that can work for parents as well. It doesn't always work. And there's lots of variables, but, having things go wrong and then saying, oh, these kids, is something that I see a lot of parents doing. And that was one thing that I learned from this job, is that, you know, being proactive and having clear communication could solve a lot of those problems, that just expecting versus just expecting a kid to do something because they're the kid and you're in a position of authority. But anything else? Because we're about to get out of here.
No. I noticed that. This was a really cool conversation, and you know, I've wanted to do this for a long time, and I'm glad I finally got the chance. And you know, thanks.
My pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for calling in, and I hope you continue to enjoy the show.
Yeah. Well, you know, continue making it.
I certainly will. All right. Thanks, Levi. Have a good night.
Right.
Yeah. You too.
Bye. Well, do you want to wrap up?
Headphones are hot.
Yeah, it's really hot in here. It's going to be a hot summer up in this room because we can't have that air conditioner.
Yeah.
Because it's a squeaker, unless Dale got another one. Oh, we're going to have a different studio.
Oh, we will. We will. And 1st of July, I'll be in a new office. If we want to make a studio in there.
Where's it going to be?
On Perimeter Road, right by the airport.
Ah. Depends on where I move, because I also have to move. So, depends on how close I am to there, because it is good to have a studio in the home. All right, folks. Well, it was lovely to have a show tonight and to have all of you in the chat. And I appreciate your participation. For Jason Osborne, I'm Brett.
Good night.
All right, and I'll leave the stream going so people can continue to chat if they want. But that's the end of the show. Thanks for listening. Take care.
You feel like this was a good idea to use this microphone across the table?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. I don't know. It just seems like a bit of a reach.
Does it? It goes further.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It was fine.
It is so hot up here. Jeez, and stuffy.
Horrendous.
Well, a lot of cleaning up to do. Yeah, so the Dan Carlin discussion was like, it started really slow, kind of... Didn't know where it was going to go, but then I really enjoyed it. So what's this movie that you're going to see? What's it about?
I think Mark Wahlberg and The Rock. They're like bodybuilders who have some kind of crime spree that they go on.
Interesting.
I heard it was good, so... Check it out. So how'd you end up at Oblivion instead of Iron Man? It doesn't make any sense.
There's a good reason. I felt like, I'd never seen The Avengers. And I didn't know if it was like chronological.
There's some vague references to it that you won't really need to have seen the movie to just like, oh, those things that happen in New York.
Well, I thought that it would be polite of me to wait for Celestine and Corey.
Oh, I see.
I really wanted to see it because I love Iron Man. Yeah. It's the best. And so the other night we prepared to